It's time for Power Hour.
Blue 20!
Your number one source for year-round Fighting Irish recruiting news.
Hot rock!
A premium subscription is just a click away at irishsportsdaily.com. And now,
hot!
Your Power Hour host.
He's good.
I love him.
Mike Frank.
All right, folks, welcome once again, everybody, to Irish Sports Daily Power Hour. I'm your host, Mike Frank, and got my co-host here today in Bob Kamel. We got another great show lined up for you. I want to start off the show by letting people know that if you enjoy what we're doing here with Bob, we're trying to expand the show, make it a little bit better. We want to keep Bob around. Plus, there's a potential we may look at another potential host down the line, a former player I have in mind that might help us. So we're basically trying to raise a little bit of money. If you're a podcast listener, you know that there's a lot of people who use Patreon, which was kind of a donation type of a website where you can donate to kind of support the podcast, support the people who produce the show every week, and you can do it cheaply. We have basically two, levels, two tiers. We have a $1 month donation. That'll get you access to our Power Hour Patreon community. You can communicate with other Power Hour members, offer feedback on the show, ask questions about the show. Just kind of a little section there where you can communicate and talk about the show. And we also have a $2 donation that's going to include Power Hour Overtime. And that's going to be an extra 15 minutes of Power Hour where Bob Kamel and I will answer your questions. You'll have your own forum where you can post your questions. Only the $2 donation members will have access to that. We'll upload that to that forum after every show. And it'll be an extra 15 minutes where we'll talk and we'll answer your questions. I'm sure people will have questions, you know, Bob, about some of your time with Lou and all that kind of stuff. And we can talk about the season, all kinds of things. So for a $2 donation, you can get access to the extra 15 minutes, plus ask whatever questions you want, and we'll go from there. If you want to donate, you can go to Patreon, which is patreon.com/IrishSportsDaily. Once again, Patreon, patreon.com/IrishSportsDaily. And we greatly appreciate anything you can donate there. Basically, it's $1 per month, which is essentially 25 cents per show, which is pretty cheap. And if you want the extra Power Hour Overtime, that's $2, which is basically 50 cents per show. And that's not even counting the recruiting stuff that we'll upload there also. Just wanted to mention that. We'd greatly appreciate anything you can offer us there on the donation side. And that'll help us keep Coach Kamel happy here and doing his job. And then also help us, you know, offer some new things. Lots of Bob and I have talked about a lot of different ideas we'd like to add to the show, and we're trying to improve this and make it even better. We already feel we're the best podcast covering Notre Dame sports, and this is only going to make it better. Now, Bob, we've kind of gone through a lot of different things in talking about the program and kind of dissecting. We're trying to break down, areas that we feel like they can improve, things that they've done well. There are a couple questions, though, that we haven't got to, and I'd like to get to them today if we could. I really think that the one question I want to ask you is, why do you feel that Notre Dame hasn't been a consistent top 20 team? You've followed this since you've been gone. 30 years, it seems almost, that they haven't been a consistent top 10, top 20 team. And why do you think that they've struggled to do that?
You know, Mike, in all candor, and I think a lot of people know this, friends of mine, like yourself and others, I'm not a big Bob Davie fan.
Sure.
Okay. You know, there's a term now called a gap year where young people graduate from high school or from college and they take a year off before they go on to their whatever they're going to do. Well, I think it's where the problem lies is who was going to be the successor to Coach Holtz. And I think I'm gonna say this candidly. I just feel, you asked me a question, I feel about this. I don't know if we've ever recovered from that. Mm-hmm. You have to have a consistency with great coaches. And this goes all the way back. It has nothing to do with Brian Kelly, has nothing to do with Tyrone Willingham, has nothing to do with Coach Weiss or Coach O'Brien for that matter. But Coach Holtz was a very successful coach. We really had it going again. And then they hired Bob Davey. And I don't really feel it was like our gap year. And we may not have totally recovered from our gap year. Since that time, since the hiring of Davey or whoever was going to be Coach Holtz's successor had to be really, really on top of their game. And I think we would have continuity and greatness. And I think we wouldn't be in some of the situations that we've been since then.
I think that there's probably some truth to that. And I think that because he let the thing slide so much, it made it very hard for the next guy to come in and be successful. And it has gone further and further, which the next guy who has to take it has an even harder job, and then the next guy who has to take it has a harder job. I mean, gosh, Bob, I was in college the last time Notre Dame won a national championship, you know? And that's I'm almost 50 years old. I mean, so think about, these kids have no idea what it's like for Notre Dame to win a national championship.
One sidebar here. I would have liked to seen Coach Tyrone Willingham get another year. Mm-hmm. I really would. I really feel that with another year, he would have had a chance to, you know, really have done something special. Now, I also believe that he would have probably had to have make some coaching changes, which, as I understand it, he was apprehensive to do because of the great loyalty that he has to had to his assistants, and I salute him for that.
Yeah, I'm just going to disagree, just being around. I don't think that he would have done anything. I think maybe if he would have changed some coaches, that certainly would have helped. But I think it's leadership, and I just don't think that he had what it takes to be a great leader. I think
he had success. You know, sure. Seriously, I was doing a radio show at that time. I loved his banter, by the way. Mm-hmm. And I was asked, if there's a coaching change at Notre Dame, who would you hire? And I immediately said Tyrone Willingham, mm-hmm. because of the academic restrictions that he was dealing with at Stanford were really more difficult than the ones that we were dealing with at Notre Dame. So just an opinion, just a little thought.
No, and I agree. And I think that he, on paper, seemed to be like a great hire. There's no question. Just based off of his experience and what he could do, just did not seem to materialize to the team. And I think, you know, I think if truth be known, effort had a lot to do with that. I think he was not a guy who was committed to working hard. You and I were just talking off the air about how we feel that whoever does this needs to be somebody who is working very, very hard. And I think if truth be known, I think that would be one of the main reasons. And of course, you mentioned assistant coaches. I think he struggled in bringing elite coaches to the mix. But
just, I really would have liked to see one more year.
Sure.
I believe it was 3 years, wasn't
yeah,
it?
Yeah, he had 3 years.
I would have liked to see one more year. Now, as far as the insider, as how hard he worked, this or that, I'm unaware of that.
Sure.
I know there's a lot of criticism about his enjoying the game of golf. Nobody enjoyed golf more than Coach Holtz, and no one enjoys golf more than Coach Holtz till this day. I can assure you of
yeah.
that.
Yeah.
And I can also assure you of having golfed with him. It's nice to be around him. I absolutely love the man. I respect the man. It's not a lot of fun golfing with Coach Holtz.
Yeah, I've heard that from more than a few people.
When you talk about focus, whoa.
No question. So, I think your point is valid that I think, you know, the thing falls. And each time you're not successful, the status of the program falls, and it makes it harder. And then Notre Dame has to overcome all the other things that we've discussed. And so I think that was one of the main reasons is you know, they, and to be honest, I just don't think they did a good job in the coaching searches. I don't think that they've chosen the right people a lot of times. I think that they are a dollar late or a day late and a dollar short a lot of times when they're out there pursuing. You know, I think if truth be known on the Urban Meyer situation, had they moved forward a lot quicker on that, they'd have a chance at him. I'm not saying he would have come, but I think they would have had a much better chance. In the second time around after George O'Leary gets fired and, you know, they end up with Tyrone Willingham, that was certainly an interesting thing, but there really wasn't a whole lot of options. I mean, it wasn't like George O'Leary was a home run hire either. He'd had some good success at Georgia Tech, but he wasn't like an elite coach. And, you know, they had to essentially settle on O'Leary. Then after that, obviously the Charlie Weiss situation, Bob, you and I were around, and I mean, You were tired. There was about 1,000 names mentioned, and it didn't seem like any of them wanted that guy or wanted the job. And then all of a sudden, Charlie Weiss is your guy. I just don't think that they've done a good job of selling the program to potential coaches. And I think it's much harder to hire a head coach than people realize. This is a big responsibility. And I think, and I want to get your thoughts on this, I think a lot of coaches know about the roadblocks that you have to overcome here and the difficulty that this job is. And if they have an easier job and they've already had success at those jobs, it's tough sometimes to get a guy to come.
Well, Mike, I know we're going to go through a number of things that relate to this as we progress today, but I want to keep one thought in mind. When it comes to Notre Dame, I'm very conservative. I'm also very defensive, to be very honest with you. As a freshman football coach at Fenwick High School, I had one dream, and that was to come to Notre Dame. Freshman football games were played at 10 o'clock in the morning in Chicago. When that game was over, I was in my car down the toll road so I could beg, borrow, or steal a chair in the stadium, a seat in the stadium, and watch Eric Parsegian coach.
Sure.
So that goes back to my background. I'm an ethnic. I'm a Catholic guy. Notre Dame has been to me anything and everything there is. And that's when I take offense to people saying, people in coaching profession, well, this is not a great job anymore. I refuse to believe that. I will not believe that. This is Notre Dame. And somewhere along the line, this is going to be resurrected. But again, I'm telling you, it still comes from the end of Coach Holtz's regime and what happened immediately thereafter. And the other thing, and you know, and again, this was my deal, recruiting, recruiting, recruiting. Without recruiting, I don't care who the head coach is. And if the head coach doesn't work hard at recruiting, the assistants don't work hard at recruiting, and if you have assistant coaches that don't work hard at recruiting, you know what, you better get rid of them. Because the day, in this day and age, with all the information that's out there and all the things that are out there, just to say, well, you know, this is Notre Dame, guys are going to run in here, that's not the case. You have to work harder than everybody, because when you come to Notre Dame, Mike, you have to be on top of your game as an assistant coach and as a recruiter, because everybody will give you their best shot on the field and on the recruiting trail. So you had better be able to go in there and not only battle a school that you're competing the individual with, but all the schools that you're competing with the individual with, because I will tell you this, and I've run into this situation, where a guy will go into a school from school A and say, you know, I think the kid's going to go to Notre Dame. I don't have a chance. Let me help you with this kid. And the guy's at another school, making a third-party call, trying to gather information, because they don't want the young man to come to Notre Dame.
Yeah, and I believe, I mean, we've been in it long enough to know that it does indeed happen. So, Coach, I want to get your thoughts on this. There's been a lot of debate on our site for years and years and years, and I would just like to get your thoughts on it. When Notre Dame loses a game, and we've seen Notre Dame play these kind of games where they don't look like they've shown up. They're not ready to play mentally. They're not focused. They come out and they're just kind of lethargic. Nobody's excited, and they lose the game. Whose fault is that? Is that coaches?
It's the head coach's fault.
Okay.
I don't think there's any question it's the head coach's fault. So above, so below. I talked last week, and I don't want to really be redundant in this. The pack, the wolf pack travels at the speed of the lead pack, regardless what the situation is. And again, as we mentioned last week, you don't win on Saturday unless you win on Tuesday and Wednesday. That's where the effort starts. That's where all the tempo is, all the precedent and everything else. Of course it goes to the head coach. And then it comes down from there. And what happens after you lose a game like that and you're the head coach? You know what? The first thing you have to do is take inventory on yourself and then take an inventory, a self-report on every single assistant, what could have done better. And you know, Mike, you do this when you win also. What could we have done better? How could we have won this game? You know, we squeaked by, or it wasn't a resounding victory that it should have been. We should have beat this team by 25 points. We squeaked out an 8-point victory. Win, lose, or draw, it's on the head coach. He sets the tempo. It's his responsibility.
What would you say then, Coach, to all the people who say the players play the game? Can't blame the coaches. The players play the game.
I don't buy that. I really don't buy that. I mean, I realize that the players play the game. You know, one time, and I'll use, how can I say this? I'll use another word for what was said, but we were in a staff meeting after a loss, and one of the coaches was asked by Coach Holtz, you know, what happened with this guy? How did he keep balling this plays? And he said, well, the dumb butt just keeps, can't get this right. And Coach Holtz looked at him and said, who's the dumb butt that coaches this dumb butt? And it was true. I mean, so the head coach is responsible for the entire football team, okay? Each position coach has to be looked upon as the head coach at his position, and the onus for the success of that position goes on to that assistant coach.
Amen. I can't agree with you more. And I've been saying this for years. Look, this is about leadership, Bob. This is about when you have good leadership, it filters down to everybody. It's just like it's organization. And I mean, I want to get your thoughts. Well, go ahead. You had
okay,
to
let's go ahead. Let's go get back to Coach West and Charlie Weiss. Charlie Weiss's biggest problem was staff chemistry. Mm-hmm. And this is something I know about without getting into the specifics. But if you remember, Charlie was hired out of the NFL ranks. He did not have a network within the college ranks of guys that he had coached with, the guys that he trusted, guys that he knew of their knowledge. He was actually calling people and asking people, well, what about this guy? What about that guy? So he was at the mercy of opinions of other people in regard to college coaches. The staff had no chemistry. As I recall, he hadn't even met three of the guys that he hired when they showed up. And the other thing I think he did is he underestimated the ability of his opponents to, after a while, find that scheme that he put up and how to defeat that scheme. I equate it to, if I can, the analogy. A young guy comes into the major leagues and his first time, three, four, five times, maybe five, six times at bat or five, six games, he's hitting the ball all over the ballpark. And guys are like, wow. And all of a sudden, there's this decline in his production. Why? Pitchers knew nothing about the guy when he arrived. And all of a sudden, they start to know about the guy. So, a schematic advantage, that goes away quick because you are coaching against veteran coaches. You are coaching against guys that you have to respect. And that schematic advantage goes out the window because now it comes down to schematic advantage and technique and then all the motivational things that you spoke about. Next, if I may.
Sure.
The day that Charlie Weiss got that job, Tommy Clements was interviewed for that job. And I know people are Tommy Clements is kind of a quiet guy, you know, this, that, and everything else. Tommy Clements, in my heart of hearts, is one of the, if you go down to players, now I'm not talking about coaches. I'm talking about guys that played with Tom. I'm talking about guys that coach with Tom. I'm talking about guys that know Tom. And fans, yes, and fans that love Tom. Tom could have got this job done because he would have brought the Notre Dame community together, and it needed that. It really needed that at that time. When you have Joe Theismann, going in and advocating for Tom, Joe Montana advocating for Tom, all of Coach Parsegian advocating for Tom, all the guys that were on his team, the Eras boys advocating for Tom. I think that Tom would have come in and surrounded himself with a great, great staff. And any shortcoming, if you will, about being more overt, so to speak, I think would have been fallen by the wayside. And I believe with my whole heart and soul, Tom Clements would have been a successful football coach at the University of Notre Dame.
Be hard to argue because we don't know, but I do think that amongst his teammates, he was a very respected guy. And I think if you're respected, I think that you're going to be respected the next place you move on, that type of thing. That's something that just seems to follow you. If you can command respect from a group of people when you move on somewhere else, you can command that same type of respect, you know, as long as you perform. And it would have been interesting, and we could go through what ifs about a ton of guys, but I do want to kind of get back to the idea of coaching and, you know, it's the head coach's fault. Can you remember times where you guys played games, whether it was Coach Schembechler, Coach Holtz, where the head coach came in after a game and said, you know what, this is me. I screwed this up. You know, I was the guy who, I just didn't do a good job of coaching this. This is on me. I'm going to fix this. I'm going to help you. Did you ever have those moments?
Well, I know you talk about Bo and I know you talk about Coach Holtz, but I also coach for Francis Pay and I coach for Lee Corso.
Sure.
And I will tell you, each and every one of them on a Monday would come in. If there was a problem on the field, he put it on himself. Initially, he put it on himself. Then it would be on the assistant coaches, sometimes privately, sometimes in a staff meeting. But always, every one of those men always took full responsibility for the performance of their team.
Bob, the other thing I wanted to mention is the longer I've been doing this, I think the more I realize that, there's only so many master motivators like Lou Holtz. A lot of these coaches that are successful, they don't have his personality. They don't have the one-liners. They don't have all the things that made him, so successful. And obviously Coach Holtz had a tremendous work ethic as well. But the thing that I think that the more I'm around this, the more I realize is leadership is just so important. And it's not just about coaching leadership. It's also team leadership. I think athletes are important. There's certainly no doubt about it. And you got to get the best players you can get, most physical talent you can get. But we've seen countless times teams less talented beat a lot better teams. And I think it's leadership. But it's not just coaching leadership. It's team leadership. How do you foster that? How do you develop that? Is it you identify those people when you're out recruiting? Is it you identify them once they get there? How do you foster that kind of a program?
Well, Mike, my next comment will probably nullify any $2 or $1 donations that we're about to have. But I just finished Nick Saban's book.
Yeah.
And it's I enjoy books like this because this is not a pure football read. It's a leadership read. It's a business read. And and there were many things in there that really stimulated my mind in thinking about, what makes this team a perennial national champion. And one of the things that he talks about in there is when you go out to recruit, and I'm not going to say that he hasn't had problems. I'm not going to say any of these great coaches haven't had problems.
Sure.
Okay, but I am going to say this. I would take a player with lesser ability, with great character, than I would take a player with greater ability that may be somewhat of an issue off the field, because that will come back and that will come back and get you. And that's why, as an assistant coach, when you go out to recruit somebody, I think the term we use now, you better vet him. You had better vet him up one way and down another. And if there's the smallest inkling that I don't want to bring this young guy into our academic community, our football community, our football family, so to speak, then you know what? Pass that guy by. Because character will succeed every single time, especially during difficult times. When the chips are down, you can have a great player that is not going to help your football team if he doesn't possess great character. But those character guys are the guys that right the ship and move forward. Because there's going to be, and again, we mentioned last time, locker room chemistry. The guys that are complainers, the guys that don't like what's going on, they find each other. The guys that are totally sold into the program, they find each other. You better have a heavier venue on the side of the locker room of guys that are into the program and by the program than the other side, those guys. Because those guys are nothing but trouble, regardless of what type of ability they have. So what I'm saying again is this. Take guys that has great character, that they're not going to have off-field issues, that they're good students. When I crisscrossed the country for the past 18 years, Mike, talking to college prospects, talking to high school kids, young men, about the recruiting process. And before I talk to them about a letter, before I talk to them about an email, before I talk to them about an official visit, unofficial visit, I talk to them about the three most important things in the recruiting process. And I the third one, the second one, and the first one, the third one is play hard on every play. And it's the only one that has anything to do actually with the game of football from a physical standpoint. The second one is be the best student that you can possibly be. Because a good recruiter, when he goes out to recruit, he's going to look at that transcript. And if you've got two guys of equal ability, how are you going to separate them? I'm taking the guy with the better grades because it's indicative of so many things that are going on in his life. And then the most important thing is character. I want a guy that has separated himself by from a character standpoint, whether it's to volunteer at the homeless shelter, volunteer at the veterans hospital, volunteer in the special ed department. So when I see his entire body of work, his resume, if you will, I want to know that he has separated himself from other people who are, for lack of a better way of putting it, applying for this job.
Sure. It's interesting because I do think character means a lot. You know, I think back to some of the guys that were recruited during the time and guys I didn't think necessarily were going to be great players. I'll give you an example. This was, I guess, after your time, I think. Kyle Budenzak was a guy who played defensive line, came in as a three-star player, kind of a lowly three-star player, worked his ass off, Bob. I mean, he just worked it, and he was so respected. And you want to talk about a quality character kid, and so I get your point. I think that means a lot. And, you know, I think because he worked hard, other people worked hard. I think when you look at, say defensive line right now, you know, I know you know Mike Elston after coaching
him. You just described Mike Elston. Maybe a couple inches too short, maybe a couple pounds not heavy enough, maybe a couple ticks too much in the 40-yard dash.
Sure.
But every single day, and we call those guys program guys.
Yeah.
We knew when we brought Mike Elston in, he was not a four-star or five-star guy, whatever it was. He probably wasn't going to go to the National Football League. But every single day, Mike Elston came in there with a great attitude and a great performance. He practiced every day like it was the Super Bowl.
And I mean, that's the interesting thing, because right now I think he's got a whole group of players who don't have that. And I think it's tough for him because you've been around guys like that, Bob.
Yeah.
It's hard to pull it out of them. It's just really hard to, if they're not geared that way, it's hard to get it out of them. And I think that's something that they need to do a better job of when they're out there on the recruiting trail is, you know, you need to find guys that have that innate desire. And if you don't see it on the film, you're not going to be able to pull that out of them. It's hard to pull that out of them. And so I think that's a good point.
See, one of the things, and I think this happened at the University of Wisconsin, correct me if I'm wrong, recently, they had a quarterback that committed to them and then all of a sudden was going to take a visit to Georgia. And Wisconsin called him and said, that's it, we're not interested in you anymore.
Well, he didn't say he was going to take. He just said they offered me.
And, they offered
and,
him.
And Wisconsin pulled it based off of him just saying they offered me.
I'm for that.
Yeah.
I'm for that. Okay, we had a guy here that, was his name, Keel?
Yeah,
okay.
Gunnar Keel, yeah.
Indiana commit, LSU commit, Notre Dame commit. I mean, right out the gate. And I don't think he's lived up to his expectations. I don't know the young man. I have nothing against the young man personally. But when you see a pattern like that, step away. It's not going to change. Step away. You're not going to keep. This guy is not going to be happy regardless of wherever he was.
It was interesting you say that, because I think if truth be known on that whole situation, there was one guy on the staff who didn't want him. And that's why they didn't get him to begin with. And I think he saw what we ended up seeing, which is here's a guy who's not committed, doesn't have, you know, isn't making the right choices. And again,
enough chest to play at LSU.
But I mean, it's one of those things. It's like, I don't know whether that's true and we shouldn't run down the kid because,
no.
You know, we do, but at the same time, if you look at the final end results, I think it says a lot about it.
Mike, you know, I was just talking to a young recruiting coordinator the other day. I spoke at an event in near Chicago, and there were a number of college coaches there, and a young recruiting coordinator, excuse me, Mike, asked me if I could have some time. And we talked about a lot of things, and one of the things I talked to him about was never take a guy to take a guy. Never take a guy to fill a class. Never take a guy that you're not totally certain about. And everybody, if there's one guy at the table that says, I don't want this guy, you had better get into everything about the guy and investigate everything about the guy. And whoever that coach said that he didn't want him, that coach was exactly right.
Yeah, and he was. He's no longer here, but he was absolutely right. So question for you, Bob. One of my longtime customers asked about this, and he wanted to know more about it. You mentioned scout team and how important that was. Tell us how that works. I mean, who is chosen and why? Is there like a special teams, or I mean a special coach that just coaches the scout team, and do they have separate meetings? How does that whole scout team program work?
Well, I'm speaking from my personal experience. When I went to the University of Michigan, I was a graduate assistant coach. And the graduate assistant coaches at that time were responsible for the scout team. And so who were the scout team guys? They were probably most of all freshmen who weren't going to figure that particular year, but also older guys who would have an enthusiasm or a loyalty to the program to be on these scout teams. And what we would do is we would go through the personnel that we were playing and try to match up our guys that weren't figuring, so to speak, in playing, whether they were freshmen or whether they were older guys, and then create teams offensively and defensively out of these scout teams. The emphasis was huge. It was huge. I would practice, because I was a linebacker coach at the time, a linebacker GA. I would practice the offensive scout team alone. I would meet them alone on Monday and practice them alone on Monday. The GAs for the offensive side of the ball would meet with the defensive scout team and meet with them and practice with them on Monday. And we would actually go initially, I would show them the film of our opponent and say, okay, Mike Frank, you're the quarterback. You're a scout team quarterback this week, okay? Look at this quarterback from, USC, all right? Watch how he carries out this fake. Watch what he does here. Watch what he does there. And go through every single individual nuance, especially with guys that were the skill position guys, and say, maybe you had a wide receiver you were playing against that really was just a total burner. And you would go to your freshman list of guys who were not going to figure, we knew we were going to redshirt. He would simulate that individual at that time. And you had to take great pride in this. I remember guys coming out, and the other thing we would do to emphasize is we would give them the number of the individual that they were going to emulate that day. I remember guys one year, and obviously when we played Michigan State, it was a big deal. They took duct tape and put it around their helmets and took magic marker and painted it all their helmets green, okay? Or when we played any other team, I mean, guys really got invested in this. And if you could get 5, 6, 7 of the older guys, now for an older guy, this is tough duty because he's been around 3 years, he's been around 4 years, he knows he's not going to play. You have to grab those guys, and if they're willing to do this, they will lead those scout teams. And then when you get out to the practice field, okay, you run through those plays over and over. And basically, Mike, you hold the graduate assistant holds a card up. And everybody sees the card on offense. Clap your hands, go up to the line of scrimmage, run the play. Over and over. It got to be, and I didn't walk. I walked into this. I walked into that culture with this. But on Tuesday and Wednesday, when those guys came out, they had one goal. They were going to beat the first defense. They were going to beat the first offense. They took such pride in executing the plays of our opponent. But Mike, this was not touch football. This was get after it. And I mean, we got after it. And it would end on Wednesday with goal line. And that's when the rest of the entire team circled the scout team, and we went against the first defense. And I mean, it was knockdown, drag them out, fights, guys pulling guys off of each other. One year we played a football team that, it's not important for this conversation, but they ran a lot of motion and they ran a lot of shifts. And when I knew that this was coming up, I was like, oh my goodness, no. Because it's one thing to start from a static position, but now you've got these guys and you're trying to emulate shifts and you're trying to emulate motions. And we got it down cold. I mean, we just got it down cold. And on Saturday, we won the football game. And Bo got up in front of the football team after that game. And he said, I'm going to award footballs not to anybody who played today, but I'm going to award footballs to. And he read every single one of those guys' names that participated on those scout teams, like 30 names. He read them all. And Sunday, that ended up in the paper, the local paper, the Ann Arbor News. But that was the emphasis. And if you have great scout teams, it is so critically important to your success.
I think it's also you got to be committed to actually being physical and crashing into each other and making that a very competitive situation.
Like the guys, the thing, the guys, Mike, and I don't want to talk over you, but you got me on a roll right now. But those are the guys that played on Saturday. The guys that played on Saturday, on Wednesday, would congratulate the scout team guys. I remember Johnny Powers, an offensive guard, as I mentioned last week, walking off the field, and he said, Bobby, this is going to be easy Saturday. I just don't want to go through another Tuesday and Wednesday.
Yeah, yeah, no doubt.
But we were physical.
Yeah, there's no doubt, no doubt. Well, and I think that's been something that's been lacking for Notre Dame, and hopefully we'll see that get changed.
You know, Mike, especially with the size of the staffs that you have now,
yeah,
get a couple guys to do that. Yeah. I mean, get them off that computer for a while. Get them to interact with these younger guys. And those younger guys, I mean, they deprive them. And I'll tell you one thing I always did, Mike, always. With the older guys on Wednesday that were on the scout teams, that were on my offensive scout team, I would call them into my office or the locker room, shake hands with them, and honestly, Mike, thank them.
Yeah, yeah. Well, they certainly made everything a whole lot better, and I think that's probably a good point in that, hey, if you spend some time with them and make them feel like they're important and their job is important and recognize them, then you're going to get the kind of level of effort and attention to detail that you need in order to get the look that you're looking for, you know, from the opposition when you're trying to prepare for it. Careful. Moving on, Bob, I got a lot of other little things I wanted to ask you about. Conference or no conference for Notre Dame football? What are your thoughts on this? And I know what your thoughts were back when you were coaching, but things have changed. What are your thoughts on that?
No conference.
Okay, and why?
I'm totally, because it's Notre Dame. And it goes back to what I mentioned about where my heart was from when I was a 23 or 24-year-old coach, which is a long time ago. But I'm a traditionalist. I think Notre Dame, I really believe Notre Dame can go, you know, with a situation being where we're hitting on all cylinders, can still go through a 10-win season or even an 11-win season for that matter. I believe that with my whole heart and soul. What is it going to take to do this? I don't know, but I will tell you this. With us coming off a 4-8 season, this is a pivotal year, maybe one of the most important years in the past 20 years. This is a big, big year for a lot of reasons. And I think Notre Dame can. Why? We're at Notre Dame. Why settle for less? Why would you think that, you know, if we went into a conference and I don't know if we'd win the conference, whatever the conference would be. The other thing is, our demographic of the student body and the football team is probably more diverse than anywhere else in the country. People come to Notre Dame from as far away in the West as California. People come from everywhere. We have alumni groups everywhere all over the country. Most other schools, say Michigan State, say Michigan, USC, those are very provincial alumni bases as well as very provincial recruiting bases. So I think one of the things that we have to understand is that if you become in a conference, you become more provincial on a lot of respects. And I just don't think that's Notre Dame.
I do think that, you know, it is national, and you bring up a good point that it is national. I was just kind of playing devil's advocate there. I'm for staying independent for as long as Notre Dame can. But here's the interesting thing. You know, a lot of people think that the four super conferences are coming. Right now there's five. A lot of people think it's going to be like a four super conference, 16-team, four conferences. Can Notre Dame survive as an independent in that? Because the way it would look, obviously, with a 14 playoff is whoever won that conference would then jump into the playoffs and that would be your four teams. Can Notre Dame survive in that situation? I don't think they can unless they're a perennial top 10 team. And unless they're somebody who's consistently in the top 10, I don't think they can survive in that situation.
Well, we should be constantly in the top 10, Mike.
Amen to
I don't
that,
think
brother.
There's any question. And the other thing, you know, you bring up a great point about when these people circle the wagons and we are not going to be in one of those conferences, I will tell you this, we're not going to get a lot of support when it comes down to voting where, who goes where. But at the same time, if you create a situation for these people that are doing that kind of voting where they can't vote against you because you have been that good. I think Notre Dame can do that.
Next question. This is a thing I've been railing on for years and years and years, and it's the scheduling. And, you know, you used to go through this, so you understand it. It has been my theory that one of the big problems Notre Dame has had over the years is they've made their schedule front end heavy. How many times did you guys play Michigan and Michigan State back to back? And you know, as a coach, it's hard to get up for those two games in a row. And then Purdue after that. Now, I realize Purdue is not as good, but it's still a rival game. It's still something they'd played for years and years and years. So it's not like Notre Dame was playing, you know, Toledo or something like that. There's a lot of history there. There's a lot of back and forth. And so I wanted to get your thoughts on this because I think that has really kind of hurt Notre Dame over the years. If you're not at least 3-1 coming out of September, there is no conference championship. There's nothing to play for, and I think that the players at times can say, well, what is there to get excited about? The expectation is we're a top 10 team. We're going to play for a national championship. If we've lost two games right out of the gate, you know, and we're 2-2 coming into October, you know, that's a tough sell. And so I think that that's been a big problem. I wanted to get your thoughts on that.
Well, I think, Mike, I you know, no disrespect to you, but I think that mindset acquiesces to Michigan's better than us, Michigan State's better than us.
Yep.
I don't buy that.
Yep.
We should beat Michigan. We should play Michigan State. I think, and, you know, and I was, after, you know, you send me the email and I start to think about it and start to do my homework. The Notre Dame schedule, first of all, you should always play Navy.
Mm-hmm.
I believe that in my heart and soul. Then you should always play USC, okay? You should always play Michigan. You should always play Michigan State. Beyond that, I think I'm missing somebody here, but beyond that, I think the rest of the schedule can be tweaked here and there. But I think those four games should always be played.
They want to play Stanford every week too, or every year too.
So I'm for that too. You know, and I don't, you know, I don't know if I fully understand the term aspirational peers.
Yeah.
You know who the aspirational peers should be? People that want to be like us.
Yeah.
Not us wanting to be like them. Okay, so I don't know if I totally understand that phrase. Play Stanford, play Wake Forest, play Vanderbilt, play Northwestern. If you want to think about playing academic institutions, add them to the schedule beyond what all the teams that I've mentioned already, and I think you could have yourself a very, very good football schedule. But I don't think when I think of, you know, like you mentioned about playing a tough Michigan State team, playing a tough Michigan team. Well, they should think about, okay, playing a tough Notre Dame team. How am I going to win the Big Ten title? You know, how beat up am I going to be? Because when you play that game here, it's a tough game. But you can't think that way because I think there's a trickle effect to that in everything else that you do.
I think you're right about that. My theory is because it happens early in the season, it impacts what happens later, okay? Michigan will play Notre Dame, but then they don't play anybody else. So even if they lose that game, there's still a good chance that they'll be 3-1 heading into. And the difference, and you
and
know,
still have a shot at the Big Ten.
And you know the difference between a 3-1 football team and a 2-2 football team. It's huge as far as morale goes, especially if you're used to winning a lot of games. So I think that that's part of the issue. And I don't mind playing Michigan. I don't mind playing Michigan State. It's just how are they lined up? And here's another thing that I've been saying for a long time, Bob. Look, if you play one tough game, which is this, if you look at the formula a lot of people use, is they'll play one tough game. It's either the second or the third game of the, and then three pretty much patsies, and then you the worst case scenario is you're 3-1 before you go into the meat of your schedule. The other thing that allows you to do, Bob, is play your depth. All right, if you're knocking the crap out of UNLV, your second string offensive line's playing the whole second half, and they're doing that three times before they get into the meat of the schedule. You know how important it is for that second string offensive line. If Mike McGlinchey goes down and you know with a knee injury, and you got to throw your guy in there for the first time against USC, it's a lot different than if he had three full halves of football before he steps in there and plays against USC.
Mike, I'm going to take this all the way, 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 way back in my reasoning right here.
Okay.
And it's recruiting.
Uh-huh.
All right, you recruit a young guy. First of all, you're going to try to get the best of the best all over the country. Now, I think there's places that you should emphasize. Okay, I think Chicago being one of them. All right, and I'll say that. But now you're recruiting a young guy, and he's the best of the best at his position, and he's in San Diego. So now you recruit him to Notre Dame. He comes. He's on his recruiting visit. Guess what? We're going to play Stanford and USC while you're here. Your family is going to get a chance to see you play Stanford and USC. That's great.
Yep.
I'm interested. All right. Now we go a step farther. Now you're in your academic situation, and now you're about to graduate. You're a young guy from California. You've graduated with a degree in whatever it might be. Let's say hypothetically business. Now your next selling point is, hey, how about the Orange Coast, Orange County.
Yeah.
Must be thinking about motorcycles. Orange County Notre Dame Club. They're going to embrace you. You're going to probably go back home to San Diego and live or in that area or the San Diego Club. Yeah. This is where the business opportunities are going to be for you. This is where the opportunities for football are going to be after you. Oh, we're going to play Boston College at Boston. We got. Let me tell you something. That Boston club is really, really something special. You're going to get a great degree from here. We're going to go back there and play wherever it might be, and then fold that into the recruiting process with the fact that you're going to get a great degree, and that no matter where you're from, there's going to be somebody there that has a Notre Dame club or whatever that is going to embrace you and move forward with you after your football days are over.
Yeah, I think that that's very true. You know, I think that they do a good job of selling that and have for years.
Yeah.
And I think that that's one of Notre Dame's best advantages when you're out there recruiting. Next question, and this is going to be interesting. I really want to get your thoughts on this. Notre Dame's living situation, okay? This is another thing people have been debating for years. Now, you've been in some of these dorms. You know, they look like a 10-by-10 cell in some of these dorms. And then you look at what Clemson has, or you look at, you know, what some of these other places are building, these Taj Mahals with, you know, 65-inch screen TV and your own kitchen and your own bathroom and your own washer and dryer and all these things. Do you think, I mean, I know you're a traditionalist and you will admit this. At some point, that's going to hurt Notre Dame when they're trying to recruit against some guys that go to Clemson and that type of thing.
It'll hurt Notre Dame against a certain young man.
Mm-hmm.
It'll hurt Notre Dame against a certain young man. But if there's a, as I mentioned always, if there's a strong person in the family that you are recruiting that realizes all the fluff comes and goes and what stays is a great education and a great experience, you know, when guys come here and guys that really, I remember taking guys out to Carroll Hall, and it's the dorm that's a little bit, you know, out the other side of the lakes.
Yeah.
And initially they were like, are we in another country? I mean, but then they get out there and they meet the other students and they fall in love with the place. But you have to know that a guy is willing to do that ahead of time. And the other thing is this, Mike, they don't have to live in those dorms for 4 years.
Mm-hmm.
They really don't. I equate Notre Dame's dorms to fraternities and sororities. Well, first thing you talk to someone when you meet someone that you haven't met before, they'll add two Notre Dame people or a Notre Dame person. First question is, when did you go to Notre Dame? Yes. What year did you graduate? Well, 19, whatever, 20, now 20, whatever. Next question, where are you in?
Yeah.
There's that identification. And those are bonds and friendships that last a lifetime for the person that's willing to invest in these and look beyond. I mean, I just read the other day, some dorm has a DJ now.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, how do you justify that? I mean, what are we doing here?
Yeah.
Now, I want to, you know, you want to make it as you know, as great as a competitive as it can be. But I think there comes a certain point. Now, could you imagine Brian Kelly going to ask Jack Swarbrick, to ask Father Jenkins, who I love to death, can we get a DJ in the Goog?
Yeah.
It's not going to fly here.
Yeah, yeah.
Nor should it. Mm-hmm. Because some guys are going to say, wow, that's great. But some other parents are going to say, you know what? You're walking out of here with a degree that you can take anywhere. So I remember telling Coach Weiss one time, and I had a good relationship with Coach Weiss. He obviously is a very complex individual. But I had a good relationship with him. And not that I, you know, hung out with him or anything like that. But I remember telling him one time, you know, why do you wear your Super Bowl ring? And I know why, because it was to go out and recruit.
Yeah, sure.
To show guys, hey, this is my Super Bowl ring. And my response to that was, with the Patriots, the guy that cuts the grass on the field gets one of those. The equipment guy gets one of those. The secretaries get rings of that kind, obviously ladies' rings. You can go on and on. They. How many people with the Patriots had Notre Dame graduation rings on, or Notre Dame class rings? Take that Super Bowl ring, put it in a drawer, it'll have his time, okay? Maybe when a young guy comes to see you to determine whether he wants to come out yet or not come out yet, then you put that ring down there and say, look, I have a lot of experience with what you're talking about, but I want to take that ring, my Notre Dame ring, and walk it into a house where there's a family that respects that and all the things that go along with that. I believe with my whole heart and soul there are enough players like that all over the country. You just got to go out and be organized in recruiting, because recruiting comes down to two things, okay? Hard work and enthusiasm. Hard work and enthusiasm, and an aura of responsibility by the head coach to people that are going out to recruit.
All very valid points. I agree with all of those. Now,
so here's, am I pie in the sky, Mike? I mean, am I like
you are a little bit. Are a little bit in that.
Do you like my 1950 Cadillac with the Vogue tires?
But I mean, honestly, that's what I agree with a lot of what you're saying. Here's my thoughts. I agree that there are enough kids that have that attitude, right? That have that ability to. And the maturity and the support from home and the guidance that they need to steer them to make that hard decision. The problem, though, Bob, is you got to recruit them and you got to win those battles. And Notre Dame has been losing those battles left and right to Stanford. And they used to clean up every year over Stanford.
It shouldn't happen.
But you know what? They're losing on the field to them. And because you're losing on the field to them, and your guys are not getting kicked out for academic reasons at Stanford, but they are here. And let's be honest, Stanford's degree is just as good as Notre Dame, probably better in some respects. And so all those things matter in the end. All that stuff matters. But look, if you can't get those guys, if you continue to lose them to Stanford, there's not enough of them. There just isn't. So you got to do something. To me, the best thing, and a lot of people have been talking on the site, what is the most important? Beat Stanford. You beat Stanford, and a lot of your problems are going to go away. They just are. I mean, there were probably four or five guys last year that should have been to Notre Dame. They should be Notre Dame players. But because Notre Dame's lost so many times to Stanford in a row, and Stanford continues to finish in the top 10 and Notre Dame nowhere to be found, because of that happening over and over and over, this is why they're having those problems. And it's not just Stanford. You still got to work hard. Go ahead.
Mike, Manti Te'o coming to visit Notre Dame flew over Palo Alto.
Sure.
Flew over Los Angeles.
Yep.
Flew over BYU. Flew over Utah to come here. Why? Brian Pullian.
Sure.
Okay, Brian Pullian, I would like to have his United Airline miles. We could spend a lot of time enjoying the problem. But, I mean, that is the difference. That's the difference. You get a guy like that. Mike Turgovec, Corey Minor. Corey Minor was tugged every which way to come to USC.
Sure, sure.
But was a strong person in the house, and Mike Turgovec was relentless. He was relentless in the recruitment of Corey Minor. It's recruiting. I mean, success breeds success. You know, and I doing my homework, Shaw, in the past 6 years he's been there, he's won three Pac-12 titles. In the past 6 years, he has had five double-digit win-to-loss years. You know, and the academic requirement there is heavier. We should not lose to Stanford. Now, you talk about academics, and I think that perhaps this past year in 4-8, I hope and I believe that there's a line drawn in the sand right now that we are not only looking at the football aspects and every aspect of the football team from a pure football standpoint, from a medical standpoint, and yes, Mike, from an academic standpoint, and also from a character standpoint. I think this 4-8 season, maybe, I hate to use the term a wake-up call, But if we can move forward from this with all the things and how the things that Stanford did to beat us in recruiting and beat us on the field, I think we got a real chance to move forward here and do some great things. But I've never thought about that, Mike, in your terms. I've always thought about Notre Dame in terms of beating Southern Cal and going up to Ann Arbor and beating Michigan.
Sure.
But
you got to beat those guys. You got to beat Stanford before you can beat those guys. And that's really what, and I agree with you. It's ridiculous we're even having this conversation. This is not.
Something else to do this morning?
No. But I mean about this. We should be excited, Bob. We should be excited that Notre Dame is going to play Michigan next year. Irish fans should be excited about that. But you know what? Most people are scared because they think they're going to get tattooed. And that's how far this thing has fallen. You know, with USC, we were sitting there just last year going, oh, well, Helton's not going to, you know, he's going to be gone by the end of this season. Yeah, well, look what happened. Now all of a sudden they're rolling in recruiting and he's doing a good job. And the one thing Helton understands that the other guys didn't is to win at USC, you got to run the football, you got to stop the run. That's what he's focusing on. They're going to be a good football team here in the near future. So when you sit there and you look at all these things that are out there, and we're talking about how Notre Dame gets back to where it is, you know, this is not, you can't go from X to Y without, you know, or not X to Y, X to Z without hitting Y on top of that. So you got to make sure that you have the steps, you do the things that are proper. And I firmly believe in order to just get back to where they were, if you beat Stanford and you start landing, the guys that they took from Notre Dame last year, if you add those five guys to the class last year, it's a darn good class. And you know how it is. If you only lose two or three guys, you're like, I only lost two or three guys. But those two or three guys can be the difference between 8 and 10 wins.
See, but Mike, we're in a situation right now where we shouldn't have a reconstruction project.
Sure.
We should have a bit of a remodeling project.
Yeah. Oh, okay? I agree.
Now get back. Let me just.
But that's not what we have, Bob. When you look at it, we're looking at five pillars of the program: offense, defense, special teams, strength and conditioning, and recruiting. Five pillars.
Academics.
Obviously, but I'm talking about just the football part of it.
Yeah.
We've changed four of those. Don't tell me this isn't a rebuilding. So now let me say this. Here's the interesting debate, and we've had this on the board left and right. A lot of people say, if they win eight games, you know, that shows marked improvement next year. I say BS to that. That's what I say. And the reason why is when you look at, I think the teams that you look at.
So, Mike, are we settling for mediocrity? Is that what you're saying?
I
would hope not.
8-4 is not acceptable. I don't care if you went 4-8. The reason you went 4-8 was because you did such a crappy job the year before. 8-4 is a terrible season at Notre Dame. It should always be considered a terrible season at Notre Dame.
You win with people. You win with people. It comes down to recruiting.
Yeah, it does.
You know, and don't ever let anybody at Michigan tell you, because I know better, that this game is not important to Michigan.
Sure.
Trust me.
Oh, yeah.
This game is important to Michigan for a lot of reasons, the least of which it's 2.5 hours away. And Michigan's still Michigan, and Notre Dame is still Notre Dame.
Well, and the thing is, Jim Harbaugh understands that it's important, okay?
Yeah.
And he will make sure that they're ready. I don't know how many, Bob, in the past 20 years, 30 years that we watched them play this game, where the coach would come out, oh, it's just another game.
No,
it's not. It's not. Even if you don't want to come out publicly and say that, it's not.
It's not.
You need to embrace it. You need to say, this is more important than other games, because it is. And if you go in with this attitude with your team and you're saying, oh, well, it's just another game and you don't want them to get too high or too low or whatever the case may be, you're going to lose that game because it is important to the opposition.
It is. And you make a good point. It is important to the opposition because, again, as echo my sentiment from last week, I don't care who you are if we're playing Toledo or if we're playing USC. And you've got Notre Dame on the schedule. If you don't win another game, if you don't win another game, 10 years from now, guys are at a reunion and know the first thing they're going to talk about, we beat Notre Dame.
Yeah, yeah.
We lost to Northern Illinois, it doesn't make any difference. We beat Notre Dame.
Yeah.
Okay? I'm talking about Toledo being in a MAC team and that. Because everybody's going to give you your best shot, but the guys need to know that. They need to know that. You know, I talk about this. we were flying out to USC, and I had gone out there to USC before with Coach Holtz, and he calls me over and he says, "Bob, give the, I gave the players their exam, give the coaches their exam." Exam. And you know what the exam was? The history of the USC-Notre Dame game. And I remember with new coaches going, "Bobby, are you serious?" Well, you can go ask him if I'm serious,
yeah.
Okay? But what he would do on Monday is tell them, he's going to give them a little tidbit about this series, what it means, maybe about Newt Rockne on the train taking this team or that team. And every week, every day, he would give a couple little things about that series, all right? And at the end of the week, he handed out a test that guys could have on the airplane. And I told coaches, new guys come in, pay attention. Because if he gets these tests back and he's on the airplane and you don't have the right answers, he's going to figure that your guys don't know the right. But what did it, you know, what did it mean? It wasn't a history class. You know what it was? It was an unbelievable motivation as to the importance of this particular football. The emphasis to give guys a test.
Yeah.
Coaches, assistant coach, and coach test. But you know, all of a sudden, you know, and the young guys, obviously, they're a bit more malleable. So, like, oh, my gosh, a test about this game. This game must be really something. I don't say you do that every week. But that's the kind of motivation you need to have because everybody's going to give you their best shot.
Yeah, and I agree. And it's you get what you emphasize. And
you achieve what you emphasize.
That's exactly.
Very well done, Coach Frank.
But that's really one of those things. All right, folks. Well, that's going to be it. We'll be back next
week.
I got
one more thing, Mike. Please, please.
Yes,
okay. This was Memorial Day weekend, and I had the honor of being in Washington, D.C. from Thursday until yesterday. And what I experienced there, any of our listeners, any of you that are veterans, trust me, my heart goes out to you, and I pray for you. And if any of you right now are in the military, understand that this country loves you and embraces you. This weekend in Washington, D.C., I went up to Arlington. I can't even describe it. And then they have this thing called the Thundering Tribute or whatever it is. It was over 700,000. And you can look this up, as Casey Stengel says, 700,000 motorcyclists that come and drive around the mall being, you know, the Lincoln Memorial,
sure,
the Washington Memorial. It takes 3 hours. 3 hours for all of them to go by. And all of them have some type of a patriotic, whether it be a flag or a POW, MIA flag. If you have a chance to go to Washington D.C. on Memorial Weekend, any of you next year, go. And again, to any of you veterans, and not only to veterans, but to families of veterans, my heart is out to you. I pray for you, and thank you, thank you, thank you. We wouldn't be here if it weren't for the people that served this country.
Amen. Couldn't say it any better. And I have a lot of friends who are in the military, so I agree 100%. All right, folks, that's going to be it. Wanted to mention once again our Patreon donation drive. If you would, we'd greatly appreciate it. Go to patreon.com/IrishSportsDaily, and we have the $1 donation, $2 donation, and we'll have Bob back next week, and then we'll also talk some recruiting. We got Irish Invasion coming up, and we'll go check out some of the talent there. I don't know if, Bob, if you have time to go.
When is that?
That's next Saturday night.
Next Saturday night.
Yeah,
like this coming Saturday?
Yeah, yeah. No, not this one coming.
The one after.
Yeah, exactly. So so we'll be out there, obviously, following it and giving you updates about everything that's going on. So we'll be back next week. I hope you enjoyed that. Thanks for listening.
You've been listening to Power Hour, presented by IrishSportsDaily.com, where you can sign up for a premium subscription. Follow the Fighting Irish throughout the year on Twitter as well at ISD Update. And to listen to archive shows, visit iTunes and search for Notre Dame Power Hour.